Hi and welcome to the Understanding Impact podcast series from CDC Group. My name is Rob Comber and I work in the communications team here. And if you aren't familiar with us, CDC is the UK's development finance institution and impact investor, and we invest in businesses in Africa and South Asia. Now, in this podcast series, we look at some of the biggest challenges facing developing economies and how the private sector can play a role in helping overcome them. And in today's episode, we're exploring the economic impact of the coronavirus pandemic on women and how businesses, investors, and financial institutions can help advance women's economic empowerment as we begin to emerge from the crisis. We have a great lineup of speakers for you today, who are all playing a significant role in supporting women in the countries we invest in Africa and South Asia. But before we introduce our guests, I'd like to begin by welcoming my colleague, Jumai Mohammed, who works as an investment executive here at CDC. And Jumai interviewed all four of our guests for the podcast. So Jumai, just start by telling us why this is a subject you're so passionate about.
Thank you, Rob. First of all, just to mention, I'm delighted to be joining this episode to discuss this very important topic. I'm particularly passionate about this topic as an African, a continent where poverty disproportionately affects women more than any other part of the world. And also because I am part of an institution that seeks to demonstrate that not only is there a social need to close gender gaps, but there is also a robust business case for doing so. I'd like to share a couple of important statistics. According to Emerging Information from Analysis commissioned by UN Women and UNDP, by 2021, it is expected that around 435 million women and girls will be living on less than $1.90 a day. Furthermore, gender poverty gaps, which are already biased against women, are expected to worsen as a result of the pandemic. South Asia and Africa are expected to see the largest increase, with an additional 54 million and 25 million people, respectively, living below the international poverty line. And yet, in the urgency of the challenges, there's also an opportunity for gender-smart responses by the financial sector, with greater support to women in accessing financial capital and other needs. And that is really what you hear from the four inspiring women we talked to today.
Thank you. Thanks, Jumai. And yes, those statistics really do put it into quite a stark perspective that just how important this issue is. You mentioned there the four inspiring women who are speaking on this podcast. Can you just tell us a bit about them? Who are they?
They are Inez Murray, a global recognized expert in women's economic empowerment. She's the CEO of the Financial Alliance for Women.
The Financial Alliance for Women is a membership-based nonprofit organization that is essentially a network of large financial services providers around the world.
Abby Mustafa Madwaka, she is the CEO of the African Private Equity and Venture Capital Association.
I'm the Chief Executive Officer of the African Private Equity and Venture Capital Association, which is the Pan-African industry body that focuses on promoting investments, private investment in Africa.
We also hear from Roshani Zafar.
Hi, it's great to be here. My name is Roshani Zafar. I'm the founder and managing director of Kash Foundation, which is a microfinance institution targeting women from low-income communities in Pakistan.
And last but not least, we talked to Roberta Annan.
I'm the managing partner of Annan Capital Partners, which is a boutique investment and advisory business out of Ghana.
We will get to your interviews very, very shortly. But first, can you just tell us from speaking to them, any of the key themes that stood out from those interviews?
I mean, Rob, just a number of significant information, data points and insights provided by these women. But I'd like to focus on just some keywords that were used during the discussion. You'd hear resilience, perseverance, flexibility, collaboration and sharing ideas, and leading by example. And this is truly what these women continue to do for their clients and encourage their clients to also do for their communities.
Okay, thank you very much, Jumai. We'll start with your interview with Inez Murray, who, for those listening, is the CEO of the Financial Alliance for Women, or FAFW.
Your organization has a very broad reach in terms of geography and client base. Is there a difference, really, that you observe on how the crisis is affecting women in different parts of the world?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And I think the most comprehensive piece of research we've seen is from our member AXA, which conducted 8,000 interviews in July and August 2020 across 8 countries, 5 in Europe and 3 emerging markets, Nigeria, Mexico and Thailand. And so what you see in terms of kind of negative impacts of COVID in terms of gender roles, household responsibilities, time burden, the bulk of childcare, including education of children, an increase in domestic violence, 20% of women reporting that, an increase in that, which is already high, as you know, but then this a massive increase. Positive impacts in terms of the normalization of flex work and working from home for white collar, certainly, whether that really does play out into the ability of women to really advance up the ladder really remains to be seen as businesses around the world are thinking about more hybrid approach. On the impact of women-owned businesses, according to the survey, generally negative. So partly women's concentration in certain sectors, including, for instance, lots of traders that are compromised by curfew, food service, which was shut down. And at the same time, we have stories, positive stories about businesses pivoting. So embracing going more online, embracing the digital world, as well as getting into new manufacturing lines, such as hand sanitizers, etc. So up and down, but I'd say mainly not great on the SME sector. And then I think the most notable standout in terms of the emerging markets was the response of women in terms of starting a business, with 52% of Nigerian women saying that the negative financial impact encouraged them to start their own business.
That's really interesting to hear. And maybe just to bring the matter closer to home, and just if you could speak on how FAFW particularly is addressing this issue that is disproportionately affecting women.
Yes. Well, we're basically B2B, right? So we're basically a network of businesses that support one another. So what we've been doing is exactly what we always do, which is sharing information about what works, what doesn't, sharing innovative ideas across the network, and then going deeper on specific areas. Like, for instance, if you're going digital in your non-financial services, how do you do that? How do you do it effectively? How do you essentially, what is the curriculum? What are the most impactful? If you're innovating on your financial services, what works in one environment versus another? So it's, we have a range of peer learning activities from kind of essentially webinars like the Business Response to COVID series, to training such as our All Stars Academy that we just completed in February, to our annual summit, mentoring, and basically we're completely online. So we have done and ramped up, I would say, significantly the frequency of our services, because we've been able to do that, because before people had to travel to events and so on. And now they can do it from the comfort or not of their own home.
Next up, Jumai spoke to Abby Mustafa Madawaka.
I'm Abby. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of the African Private Equity and Venture Capital Association, which is the Pan-African industry body that focuses on promoting investments, private investment in Africa.
So just globally, women's jobs are 1.8 times more vulnerable to the COVID crisis than that of men. Abby, are you seeing through your work that women working in the African continent are being disproportionately affected?
Yeah, sadly. So I think if we take a step back and we just look at the demographic and we see that, the continent is made up of, like, the women working on the continent, they're just under 60% of the labor force. So just by this mere percentage of women working, we can already see that this subset would be more likely to be affected by any shocks to the economy. So if we look at the case globally, like you've rightly said, women's jobs are 1.8 times more vulnerable. That's what's happening globally, and Africa's no different. We have been seeing the same on the continent. Just looking at a World Bank research report, I think it was done about 2 or 3 months into the pandemic. And basically, it looked at women-owned businesses as well as male-owned businesses in some key countries, Kenya, Nigeria, South Africa, and I think Ghana was the last one. And what the report showed was that, you know, a lot of women, they had to close their businesses more so than men as a result of the pandemic. And, you know, this is no surprise. As we know, on the continent, many women are the primary caregivers.
Well, those are really interesting data points. Have any AFCA member companies been introducing initiatives to support women during the crisis?
Yeah, the short answer is yes. But I'll probably take a step back and just say, you know, annually, AFCA, we run a private equity. So we used to do a fund manager industry survey and then an institutional investor industry survey. But then we combined the two. And last year, for the first time, we ran a joint annual private equity industry survey. So we're about to release one next month for 2020. And what it shows is 91% of fund managers and 88% of institutional investors highlighted social considerations as very important when investing in African PE. So, I mean, to me, what this shows me is it clearly demonstrates the importance of the industry places on the social impact of investment. So I think that's important to note. So reflecting this mentality, we've seen several AFCA members start introducing initiatives to support women-led businesses and also female entrepreneurship on the continent. And we saw this change both at the onset of the pandemic and also before the pandemic, in all fairness.
No, that's excellent to see. So beyond the pandemic, what role can private equity and venture capital play in advancing gender equality?
I mean, on a whole, my view is the economic development of the continent is inherently interlinked with the progress of its women, which means where we are right now, it requires intentionality, not only to eliminate the existing barriers to women in leadership, but also to eliminate the barriers to women participating in economic activities as a whole. So with that being said, private capital, private investment has a really important role to play here. If we look at some of the data from McKinsey Global Institute, they estimate that if we continue at the current pace, and this is really jarring, if we continue at the current pace of progress, it would take the continent 142 years to reach gender parity. So, I mean, Jemiah, being a woman, I know these stats are something that you just don't want to see. We need to do something to accelerate this and to just reduce the amount of time it will take to get to gender parity in general. And I think PE plays a really important role here.
And our third guest is Roshana Zafar, the founder and managing director of the Cash Foundation, a microfinance company in Pakistan with a focus on women.
We know that the pandemic has disproportionately affected women. Roshana, could you provide some examples from your work of where you've seen this happen? And is the impact the same in Pakistan as it is in other parts of the world?
I would say, Jemai, the impact is very similar because a lot of women work in segregated trades. And they work in trades that are considered non-essential. And when I say non-essential, they're essential. A lot of the work that women were doing through the loans that we were giving them was beauty salons, for example. And as we know, that anything that had to do with beauty and healthcare, in this care, well-being rather, not healthcare, got affected as part of the pandemic. So a lot of these businesses closed down when lockdowns happened. The other businesses that women are involved in particular was related to catering, food, restaurants, you know, a lot of that value chain. And again, as we all know, that got very affected through the lockdowns and through COVID.
How can, or maybe what more can financial institutions and the investor community better do to better support women as we emerge from the crisis?
The first thing is what there is always a silver lining in a crisis. I think that's the first thing we all need to realize. And one of the silver linings that we do see in this case is digital financial services. I think that this is an opportunity to actually piggyback on a lot of the innovations that are happening in Pakistan and which have taken place across the world. So I think that's one action item or actionable thing that we all need to do in terms of how do we leverage and how do we bring women within the bandwidth of digital financial services. The second thing that we've learned, again, as an industry and in particular as an institution, is flexibility is important. I think, to give you an example, we had never rescheduled. It was just overnight. We had to do this overnight, sitting in, sitting down and just saying, okay, tomorrow we're going to reschedule loans and we have to come up with options. So one thing we've realized is that this is an option, like, circumstances can change, situations can be, different for different individuals. We should be more flexible as lenders, and you can't have that cookie cutter, vanilla, one size fits all approach for people, especially not for female entrepreneurs. I think the third thing is working with the regulator. So I think what we've also realized in Pakistan is that, there are multiple stakeholders and there are multiple nature of entities as far as the sector is concerned. There are microfinance banks, there are non-banking microfinance companies, there are for-profit, not-for-profit microfinance. And I'm sure you'll see a plethora of such options in any other country as well. So, and each institution brings its own requirements and needs. So we really need to have a fund or a source of what you would call the lender of the last resort in such cases. So very quickly, we were very glad that the State Bank and the other regulator, which is the Security Exchange Commission of Pakistan, they had very quickly put together, the option for allowing us to, requiring the banks to reschedule our loans. So this gave us time to breathe. But that's not enough because contingencies will continue to happen. There'll be natural disasters. There'll be all kinds of things that happen. So we need to build a risk mitigation fund in the long term.
Finally, let's hear from Roberta Anand, the founder of Ghana-based investor Anand Capital Partners.
Have you been encouraging the companies that you invest in to introduce initiatives that support women through the crisis? And do you have any examples to share?
Yes, so definitely. I mean, the issue of diversity and inclusion has become an all-important discussion, right, at the world, as the world intensifies efforts in the fight against gender disparity and inequality. On several occasions, I've found myself as one of the few women in the room. It's a bad narrative which needs to be challenged. So I always ensure that the businesses that we invest in have women at every level of the supply chain. So at least 50% are, giving an opportunity to either employ women, more women into the supply chain, or have women in very senior positions. Because I feel when you, and it's not even just a gender thing. I know gender is very, very much of importance, and we just celebrated International Women's Day. But we have to look at things like race. We have to look at things like even like the intergenerational dialogue between young people and the older generation. Because even in Africa, there's this notion that the older generation know more than the younger generation, and that often there's a gap in communicating. So we need to have all of these represented at a very senior level so that we can carry the vision forward, because you cannot make decisions that are going to affect, the lives of women, young people, Africans, and then not having them, to be part of the decision-making process.
And you've written very much about, having more senior women in leadership. What more do you think investors can do to support women's economic empowerment as we emerge from the crisis?
One key thing is practice and, what you preach. I will give an example of our company and how we have done this. So what we are doing within the context of Anand Capital Partners, it's not only to rely on government or international organizations or, major players. Everybody's struggling with their own internal issues. But for us to take, the necessary step to support their endeavors to really tackle the economic impact of COVID. So we supported with an organization, Anand Capital Partners, partnered with Women's Empowerment and Investment Group and Grow Unite Build Africa, GUBA, to find a practical solution to the challenges that women SMEs were facing, especially with funding. So we set up the COVID-19 Stimulus Fund to inject capital into 10 female-led enterprises with an established record of business growth potential to stay afloat. And I even during the competition, we had an overwhelming 4,000 applications, which shows that, you know, a lot of women were really being heavily impacted. But out of the 4,000 applications, only 700 businesses were even qualified for funding. And when I say qualify, I mean have their business registration and their audited financials and all of those things in place. So we saw with the other applications, so the 3,300 that did not qualify, all an opportunity to also build those businesses and provide them with the infrastructure. So we put them all on a platform and started training them on how to structure their business and how to register, how to get their finances audited, how to even track their spending on this OZE platform. And we've now introduced like a training webinar series to ensure that these women also go through financial literacy program and, you know, even like understanding, you know, the legal framework and policy framework within the sectors that they're operating under. So we are doing this by, you know, practicing. We're not just talking, we're actually, you know, practicing and we're implementing and we're doing and we're putting our own resources into addressing the challenge, which I think a lot of businesses should adopt.
Now, Jumai, back to you to finish off this episode. I know you wanted to bring our guests' answers together in some way, and to see if they're seeing anything that can give us some hope for the future. So tell us what you asked and what you found out.
Absolutely, Rob. We wanted to know just the important key themes that these women had observed in 2021 that gives them hope for women's economic empowerment going forward. And truly, you could tell from their answers that, you know, 2021 is started on a very good note with some key appointments on the women front, but also just how businesses are pivoting their solutions to clients and making sure that, you know, they're able to continue to offer services and in a digital world in a sort of less face-to-face manner. Have you observed any interesting developments in 2021 already that gives you hope on women's economic empowerment going forward?
Yes, I'll say that 2021 has been a year of significant firsts for women across the globe. Okay. And if I would, again, going back to World Trade Organization, having the first woman and the first African woman and the first Black woman, you know, having the vice president of the United States as a woman. So we're seeing a lot of these significant changes.
To be honest, I think we're having the right conversation. So I won't say I've observed any themes. I think just the level of discourse, dialogue, and relevance that people are placing on women empowerment and, you know, from a PE perspective, gender lens investment, it has been fantastic. You know, I've been out of the industry for 18 months, and to come back, I can actually say with fresh eyes where we are now and the importance that kind of gender lens investment has versus when I left, it's phenomenal. So that progress has been great.
The non-financial services piece, we've seen this massive pivot to digital. You know, and I would say ourselves, for instance, our last service to go online was the All Stars Academy, which was normally a 1 week in-person training. And we ran this online over 4.5 weeks in January and February with the support of CDC. And we had 4 times as many students as we would in the in-person event.
To give you a statistical quantifiable answer, 86% to 87% of our clients have already paid us back of the pre-COVID portfolio. And we're expecting the remaining 10% to come back in the next 2 months or so. So in reality, we are expecting to write off below 5% of the previous portfolio, which again, given the circumstances, is a huge, a huge success.
So that's it for today's episode. Hopefully it's given you a better understanding of the economic impact of the pandemic on women and how we can help with the recovery. Thanks very much to all of our guests today, and thank you also to Jumai Mohammed for asking the questions. If you're enjoying the podcast, please do remember to rate, review, and subscribe to the show wherever you're listening to it. Thanks once again for joining us. We'll be back with another episode in a couple of weeks. See you then.